When people ask me why we came to Malawi or how we know the Chapmans, I always ask them, well, do you want the long version or the short version?
Yeah.
And, you know, usually my short version is we knew some people here.
Yeah.
But the long version is much, much longer than that.
Yeah. So today on the podcast, we have an interview with Eric Chapman, who's the founder of the ministry here in Malawi and who we worked with before in Moldova. But just a quick update for everybody about some of the things going on in the ministry and in our lives. The last few months have been very busy, very productive. The Chapmans have been here, which you'll get to meet Eric in the interview, and they were doing medical clinics while at the same time we had Shepherd's Academy students. And then we just got finished with 2 weeks of a conference for the pastors that kind of wraps up our year in the mission and kind of is a time of seeking revival and encouragement and challenging one another. So it's been a very, very busy month and a half of ministry. And now we're kind of wrapping things up for the year, getting ready for the holidays, and trying to survive the October heat in Malawi.
I'm currently wearing my cooling towel, and my hair is wet from the cool-off quick shower that I just took, because there's no escaping it.
Very fashionable.
I try. Yeah. It's fashion. You just don't know.
But today we have a very fascinating interview with Eric Chapman. He is a veteran missionary. Like I said, the founder here. When you think of Eric, what do you think of?
I think of his silly faces and funny jokes.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say that he's a water snob.
Yes, that too.
You've accused him of being a water snob when we lived in Moldova because he only bought the best bottled water.
Back before we knew what Berkey water filters were, which is what we all use here now. Yeah, we had to buy our water in Moldova, and he would only buy the best brand, so I made fun of him.
Yeah. So you had connections with Eric and his ministry before I did.
Right. Yeah, so in 2003, 4, and 5, I was a summer staffer at Crossings Camps in Jonathan Creek in Western Kentucky. And while I was a staffer there, we supported a camp in Moldova. And our whole thing every summer was $15 sends a kid to camp in Moldova. And that connection goes even farther back to when Crossings, then President David Melber, wanted to support someone and got connected with Eric through a mutual friend. But so I knew about them then, and then fast forward a few years later, I was working as the receptionist in the central office at Crossings, and I was pregnant with Jude, and Josh came home from school one day and was like, he was in his undergraduate at Boyce at the time. He came home from school one day and said, what would you think about spending 2 years overseas?
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, I had always wanted to be a missionary, and we were pumped. So we started applying with a couple of different agencies, and those things weren't going as we had hoped, yeah, really. And so I'm just at work one day, real big pregnant, and Eric just happens, as we say, although obviously it was the Holy Spirit, just happens to be passing through Louisville and wanted to stop and say hi to David and meet the office staff. And so he comes in and we all gather in the conference room. And I remember him saying, I need you guys to pray for me. I'm wanting to start a school in Moldova. And I had a guy who was going to come, but he's dropped out. And so I'm praying for someone who will come teach at my school. Mm-hmm. And something clearly with my history with Crossings, I loved camps and Josh wanted to teach. And I never thought that those things would go together.
Yeah.
And so when Eric said that, it was all I could do to stay in my seat.
Yeah.
So I remember waiting by the door while he talked to David, waiting for him to leave so I could catch him in the parking lot on the way out. And I was so nervous that somebody was going to call and I would have to answer the phone and I was going to miss him. But then when he finally did, I waddled out into the parking lot after him. And I was like, I think my husband and I would be really interested in this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's how we got connected with them. And you met them for the first time when we landed in Moldova.
That's the first. We had emailed, but that was it. And there was no, well, I guess there was Skype back then, but it wasn't too terribly popular.
Yeah.
There was no FaceTime or anything. It was just Skype. That was it. And we worked with them for 2 years in Moldova. And all the time we were in Moldova, they kept coming back and forth from Malawi and telling us about Malawi. And so eventually we visited them here and the rest is history. But I think we have sat around the dinner table many times listening to Eric and Stephanie's stories from the mission field in their early days. Mm-hmm. So it's great to be able to share some of those things with our listeners as Eric kind of tells his story in this podcast. I'm Josh.
And I'm Stacey Lee. We're missionaries in Malawi with Gospel Life Global Missions.
And this is the Gospel Life Podcast, where we talk about missions, Malawi, and more. Well, it's good to have you on the podcast finally. Welcome to the Gospel Life Podcast, Eric.
Well, thank you. It's I've been listening to these on Facebook and online, so it's a privilege to be here with you.
Well, we just wanted you to be able to kind of share your story, and we have a lot of people that listen to the podcast who are interested in maybe a missionary call one day, mm-hmm. and you have a full missionary career that I think you can share some wisdom with those types of people. So why don't we just start at the beginning? How did God call you to be a missionary?
Well, that's a good question. It was not my intent ever to be a missionary. God called me to preach when I was 17 years old, and I went off to Bible school like a lot of guys do, like you did. I guess I had a dream in Bible school that I would like to preach the gospel to people that have never heard the gospel. Hmm. That was really something I thought a lot about. And at the same time, I never gave it a lot of thought to be a missionary. I was doing home missions. I started out heading out to California to plant a church and do home missionary work. And I thought that might be my missionary career. It would just be more stateside. Mm-hmm. But we were in Pensacola, Florida. A friend of mine was taking a trip to the Ukraine. And I wanted to go to the Ukraine with him, but it was very difficult for me financially at that time.
What year was this?
This would have been 1992.
Okay. And Ukraine had just broken away in 91, right? Yeah.
Well, just basically opened up. Yeah. The Soviet Union was beginning to dissolve and split up. There were a lot of guys starting to take some mission trips that way. I was invited to go. I just didn't have the funds to do it. So my friend came back. His name was Rick. Rick came back and we sat down at a Wendy's in Pensacola, Florida. And we sat there for 2 hours and we talked about his mission trip. It was a fascinating story of people getting saved, hearing the word, a great hunger for the word. And as Rick was telling his story, I was so impressed with his story, but I was also moved by the fact that Rick began to weep and cry as he told the story. And he's sitting there trying to eat a bowl of chili, and I saw tear fall in the chili, and I just couldn't believe it. And at the end of that conversation, Rick began to talk about how we needed to get missionaries to the Ukraine immediately. We needed to move now. The door was open now, and he looked across the table at me, and he was very close, just, you know, those small tables you have at Wendy's. And he nearly put his finger on my chest, and he said, Eric, he said, you're a church planter. You've done this. You know what you're doing here stateside. It wouldn't be a big leap for you to go to the Ukraine and do this. He said, you need to be the one to go. You need mm-hmm. to be one of those guys who go. And he said, you know, I'll support you. I'll do whatever it takes. Just you need to consider this. And my first reaction was, oh, you got to be kidding me. What language do they speak there? I mean, I have enough trouble. I'm from West Virginia. I have enough trouble with English sometimes.
And I'm sure you had grown up in Cold War America for 80 years. This has just been closed. These are the villains from James Bond and that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, and I got to thinking about that later as well, you know. These were our enemies. When I was a school kid, I don't know how it was. I'm older than you, Josh, but when I was a school kid, we used to dive under our desk for certain drills. We would have these drills where, you know, I guess if a nuclear bomb went off, we were safer under the desk. Now that I'm older, I don't really think that made a lot of sense, but maybe if it was a long way away and the glass broke out or something at our building, that may have been the purpose for it. But, we were always thinking that we could be nuked, even though we didn't really understand that. Mm-hmm. So here we are discussing taking the gospel to people who used to be our enemy. And I think that's very biblical. I think that's just a beautiful thing. But at the time when God began to speak to me about it, it was through my friend who had made a trip. When I went home and I told my wife about what he had told me, I told my wife everything except the part that I should be the one to go, because I knew that that would probably scare her and it would affect her, and we weren't planning to do overseas mission work. We'd never discussed it, and I was in my 30s by then.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I'd already done some stuff out in California and all. So, little by little, bit by bit, God moved us along. I was supposed to meet with some fellows. I was in a group called the Baptist Bible Fellowship. Uh-huh. And I was supposed to meet with some of them up in Ohio, New Philadelphia, Ohio. And they were going to talk about starting a church. We were thinking about up in the Cleveland area somewhere.
Yeah, that's where you're from.
I'm from Akron, yeah, not far. I say I was born in West Virginia, but yeah, I was raised mostly in Ohio. Yeah. And I was supposed to meet with these guys, and this is not a very nice story here, this part, so I'll make it as short as possible, but we didn't have cell phones in those days. We didn't have the internet. I was going to go up and see my folks, and I was also going to meet with these gentlemen, three gentlemen, and when I got up there, only one of the guys met me, and he said, you know, you didn't go to our conference school, and we made a decision yesterday. Since you didn't go to our school, we weren't going to fund you in church planting. Now, the funny thing about that is, though, I was telling my wife on the way up, if this doesn't work out for any reason, and I thought it was going to work out, because I came from one of the bigger churches in our conference, but if it doesn't work out for any reason, I told my wife, we need to really consider going to the Ukraine, and she agreed. As a matter of fact, my wife said, I think maybe that's where we're supposed to go.
Yeah.
So God was working in her
life. Did she ever have any fear or pushback during that process, or she was
my mother-in-law did, but she didn't.
Yeah.
But no, she really didn't. She began to talk to me about it like it was something she really was interested in.
Yeah.
And I think God was working in both of our hearts without us talking a great deal about it. Mm-hmm. Basically, I'd relayed the story from my friend Rick. And then from there, it was just like God's working in both of our hearts.
Yeah.
And when I said, if this doesn't work out in Ohio, maybe we should consider this, she's already considered it, and she's been praying about it. Mm-hmm. So God is preparing us to do this mission work.
Yeah.
And we're thinking it's going to be in the Ukraine.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't the Ukraine.
Yeah.
We went into Odessa in 1993. But you see, now we have another long story. See, I could just tell you long story after long story.
No, just keep going. So how do you get to where you end up?
Well, when I went back after Ohio, that doesn't work out because I'm not from the conference school.
Yeah.
I went to another school.
You went to the wrong Bible college.
I went to the wrong Bible college. I mean, it was a school they sent some of their kids to, but it wasn't the one they wanted to support.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, later, all those guys supported me as a missionary. So, you know, it wasn't that big a deal. I don't know why it was a big deal then, except it was God's will for me not to start a church in Ohio.
Yeah.
It's funny how God works.
That's right.
And I didn't have my feelings hurt at all because I'm already starting to think another direction. Uh-huh. But we took a trip. Now, that would have been in early June. So I went back to Florida, and I began to talk to my friend Rick, and I said, you know, Rick, I think maybe you're right. Maybe God wants us to go over there. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking maybe one term, like one four-year term, Josh, you know, and then I'll do some good, and then I'll come back to the States, and I'll go back to church planting, or I'll take a church or something. Mm-hmm. And so My friend Rick gets real excited about it. He said, well, why don't we take another, I just arrange another trip over to the Ukraine. So we actually very quickly organized another trip. Well, he organized another trip in 92. And we had an exciting time. I mean, it was an exciting time. I mean, there was some funny things happened. You know, I've never been out of the country before up to that point. Not even to Canada, not even to Mexico. Yeah. I had never been out of the country before. My wife had never been out of the country. But we just had a great time. We were preaching in the central square of Kyiv, and we would see anywhere from 50 to 100 people get on their knees and repent. Of course, we don't speak the language. We don't really know what happened, but I mean, it was exciting all the same.
Yeah.
We went down to the train station. We started making these little poodles out of balloons. I don't know if you've ever seen anybody do that.
Yeah.
I had learned that for this trip. And we're sitting there making these little poodles, and people are just lining up to get them. And then we'd gather a crowd and we'd preach. And people are going all over the former Soviet Union from Kyiv.
Yeah.
And we're giving them the gospel. So I don't know what impact that had, but we just had a great time. And it was sure in my heart and in my wife's heart that that's what God wanted. We went straight back to our home church after that trip, the 1st of August, and we said, God wants us to go to the Ukraine.
Yeah.
From there, we needed to find a mission board. And that that proved to be more difficult, and I'll tell you why. God laid on my heart on that trip that we needed to be in the Ukraine by the next summer.
Yeah.
And if you know anything about mission boards and raising funds through mission boards, first of all, the convention boards, no way are you making it in a year.
Yeah.
And most of our other boards that come from our other Baptist circles, you know, or some of our independent Baptist churches or some of our other small denominational Baptist groups, you just can't do it in a year. I mean, I went to some mission boards and they said, oh, we had our school in July and you missed it. You got to wait another year.
Yeah.
So how am I going to, you know, they're not going to take me. And I mean, we went everywhere. We finally found a little board up in the hills of Tennessee and outside of Bristol.
Yeah.
And they said, well, brother, we're here just to help you. Anything you need. Okay, well. And so I went up there and I looked a few times. Now, I'm from Ohio. They're from Tennessee. And it was a little odd at first. And I made a couple trips there just to make sure that's what I wanted to do. But obviously, I couldn't find anybody else who would help me go over.
Yeah.
I thought about just going through my local church, but my pastor didn't have the mentality to just take me as an independent missionary and go through my local church. He wanted me to find a mission board. So I go with this little group out of Tennessee. They had missionaries in Bulgaria. They were moving up into the Ukraine. What I didn't know at the time when we finally decided to go with that little group is that they were actually working toward getting into Moldova, but they weren't calling it Moldova. They were calling it Prednestrovia, which is a breakaway region of Moldova. It means trans, on the other side of the Dniester. In Romanian, we call it Transnistria, which is a little easier to pronounce than Prednestrovia, the Russian name. But I learned Prednestrovia, and I had no idea. When I got up, when we finally got there a year later, they took us over to Prednestrovia. They had an apartment there in the city of Tiraspol, just over the border from the Ukraine, into Moldova. And still, remember, I didn't know it was Moldova because they had had a little civil war.
Yeah.
You know, this whole Soviet region, they were fighting in all these countries. In Central Asia, everywhere, they were having fights.
Yeah.
And trying to decide, you know, what their identity was going to be. But we ended up in this little area just across the border because it's a city of 220,000 people at that time and not one missionary.
Wow.
We were down in Odessa, and there were, I want to say, thousands of missionaries. I just don't know how many, but every restaurant I went into, every hotel, there are missionaries, you know, OM, everybody was there, everybody.
And just to, for the listeners who don't know Moldova very well, if you look at a map of Moldova, you're not going to see it unless you look at a big map, and there's a little sliver that is Transnistria. And if you, even to this day, read a guidebook like Lonely Planet about Moldova, they're going to tell you, if you're American, if you're a Westerner, do not go to Transnistria. It's a living museum of the Soviet Union, I think one of them said.
It is. And they still keep the hammer and sickle. It's a little less hostile than it was when I went.
Yeah.
The reason why I think they didn't bother me too much when I went there is everything was new. Missionaries were a new thing. They were coming to the other part of Moldova, and I think they wanted to give the projection that they were a free country.
Uh-huh.
They were anything but a free country. They were more a mafia-run state
yeah.
than anything else at that time. Mm. They used to brag about being the new capital of the Soviet Union. The mafia was huge there, and we were the only missionaries. I went up to the U.S. Embassy a few months after we moved there in 1993, and the U.S. Embassy said, "You're not supposed to be there." I said, "Well, I came in from the Ukraine direction. I didn't come in from the Moldovan direction, you know. And I said, I didn't know anything. I didn't even know about the Civil War
yeah.
until I got there. And so we just were uninformed about what was going on there. Mm-hmm. But this little mission board I was with, as most little mission boards, it's just they fly by the seat of their pants. And,
yeah.
and I was flying with them at that uh-huh. time, you know, uh-huh. and we ended up there. We started our first church in November of 1993, and it was just like a miracle thing. We rented what they called the October Cinema. It had 300 seats, and when I woke up, I think it was the third Sunday of November, I woke up and that morning, it was right before Thanksgiving, and it was snowing. And I was a little bit concerned that nobody would come to the evangelization. We called it an evangelization at the time. We'd passed out brochures. We'd put up signs all over town. But I was concerned anybody would come, particularly when it's snowing and I knew there was no heat in the building.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking like an American, heat's a big deal, right?
Yeah.
Lights are a big deal. We didn't always have lights in our building. You know, sometimes the guy who turned on the lights must have had a good Saturday night and he didn't show up. So we didn't have any lights except for just a few security lights. Uh-huh. But we managed. But that first Sunday, we had over 100 people there. And our deal was, if you came for 5 Sundays, we were going to give you a whole Bible. We had bought some Bibles. Mm-hmm. We're going to give you a whole Bible, but you got to come 5 Sundays because I wanted people to hear the preaching of the right. gospel. And people came, and they got their Bible, and they said, "Can we get another Bible? Would you come 5 more Sundays?" I gave out Bibles for 25 Sundays.
Wow.
I gave out thousands of Bibles at that time. And people were making professions of faith, but it was clear they weren't always understanding. Mm-hmm. I was trying some Billy Graham techniques and stuff of mass evangelism. Being Orthodox people, they thought somewhere along the way, if they could memorize that sinner's prayer, they were just going to go to heaven for that sinner's prayer. And so I tried to adjust everything I was doing to these folks. Everything was just learning it as I go.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have anybody teaching me. I didn't have anybody working with me.
Yeah.
I had a few local guys that I'd latched onto when I first got there. I had an old Jewish guy that was, he got saved later, but he spoke really good English. He said he was helping me out. God just brought people as we needed them. There's some details of this I'm not going to go into on your podcast, but I mean, there were miracles going on in those days. But there was a Sunday about in March. I want to say it's at the beginning of March because the weather was starting to warm up. I don't remember the exact date. This is 1994. I was praying that God in His Spirit would move. And one Sunday, I was preaching on Jesus, as I was doing every week, and I looked around and I saw the grandmothers, the babushkas, crying. Mm-hmm. I saw men wiping tears from their eyes. You could hear a pin drop, and I felt that the Spirit was doing something unusual. So I ended my sermon just a little bit early, because I've always been a believer when the Spirit's moving, it might be best to get out of the way.
Yeah.
So I ended the sermon, and my invitation was this: I'm going to get on my knees here, and I'm going to pray for you. Mm-hmm. Many of you have been coming for months now. You've heard the gospel over and over. And if God is speaking to your heart, I want you to come up here to the front. Now, remember, it's a cinema. It sort of has a natural platform, a natural altar at the front, like a mm-hmm. church. Mm-hmm. I said, "Kneel here, and don't get up till you know for sure that you're born again by the Spirit of God. Make sure you know you're saved when you get up." I knelt to pray, and when I got up 3 or 4 or 5 minutes later, the whole front, most of the people had come forward. I am sure out of the 600 people, 400 of them had come forward. Mm-hmm. And most people stayed and prayed anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes.
Wow.
When they got up, it was a different group of people. The ministry took a different shape. Mm. Everything was new. Everything was changed. people wanted to study the Bible. So we started a layman's institute, a Wednesday night Bible study. We met in the Veterans Club. We just covered up the Statue of Lenin. This is the Communist Veterans Club. And it was just an amazing time now. And we're teaching people. Our first baptism, we baptized over 300 people.
Wow.
It took two of us 3 hours to baptize everyone. Wow. I probably will never see that again in my life.
Yeah.
There was, honestly, I felt that this was a spiritual awakening going on there in the city of Tiraspol. We began to have always 1,000 people coming to the evangelization. Mm-hmm. We moved from the October cinema to the Tiraspol cinema. They had a 600 plus seats, plus two other auditoriums. My wife was teaching over 250 children.
Wow.
In the children's group, we had 600 to 1,000 every Sunday. And this went on for 2 years. Mm-hmm. We had a Sunday school class in our apartment. We had to divide into two groups because we couldn't handle 120 kids in one. So we had 60 kids in each group. I know how many kids were there because I counted their shoes. They always take their shoes off.
Uh-huh.
So we counted the number of young people that were there. We started young people's ministries. I was teaching English at there was an English school called School 6. I was teaching English, and I did it specifically to make a deal that I would get their gymnasium on Friday nights. And I would have hundreds of young people come, and we'd preach the gospel to them. Many got saved. We were running youth camps in the summer, and many were getting saved. So it was just a really fantastic time of ministry. And I would say that lasted from 93 up to about 95, even into 96 to some degree.
As you're seeing all this fruit from the labors, I know that's exactly the same time that Satan's going to be attacking in different ways. What were some of the hardships or the discouragements that you had to fight against during that time?
Well, sometimes we missionaries don't like to talk about those things.
Yeah.
But I will say that probably the number one hardship was trying to learn the language. The number two hardship was just the poverty of the situation. It's amazing. You have Christmas, and you know I'm an American. I had a small American salary. I wouldn't say it was a great salary. Remember, I took a year to raise my money. I didn't take 3 years to raise money like most missionaries do today, or 4 years or whatever. But God supplied. We had enough to be able to live well in that part of the world, because we were basically living on $150 a month. Everything was really cheap. We were still on the Soviet sort of economy there.
Yeah.
So we didn't have any money shortages, but there was nothing to buy. Basically, we're talking a sausage, cabbage, potato mentality, bread. We'd have to spend in bread lines for hours sometimes to get a loaf of bread. And I would stand in the bread lines with them. And part of the reason I stood in the bread lines is not because I like bread so much that I wanted to stand for 2 hours to get a loaf of bread. Sometimes I just wanted to identify with them.
Yeah.
That was my spirit in those days. I wanted to identify with them. Somebody came up to me when they saw me in the bread line, said, you know, if you just give that girl an American dollar a month, $1 a month, she will give you your bread. You can go straight to the front of the line, get your bread. You see, some people are doing it, he said.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, but people are coming to my evangelization. They're watching me. I can't do that.
Yeah.
I have to stand in line if I want bread like everybody else. It was difficult with the mafia changing money. You couldn't change money in the banks. If you change money in the banks, you might get 10,000 Prednestrovian rubly coupons, Transnistrian rubles, you know, for 10,000 for a dollar. But on the street, you could get 45,000.
Wow.
So, you know, if you change at the bank, you cheat yourself, because everything's based on the $45,000 price.
Yeah.
And so we changed on the street, and that had some difficulties at times. I don't think anybody ever stole anything from me. I always changed from one old lady, and I knew I could outrun her, so she's not going to steal from me. And plus, she liked my business. She liked my dollars.
Yeah.
So couldn't use the banks, so when people came over, they brought dollars. So we had to be careful with the mafia. We had to be careful around town. It was a police state. We were always getting stopped by the police. So always having to explain who we were. There was some difficulties there, but I would say maybe the most difficult part was that the Baptist Union, the Unregistered Baptists, and some of those guys didn't understand us.
Yeah.
For some reason, we were a threat to them. They didn't understand Americans. I had gone to all of them, asked if they wanted to work with us. They didn't really want to. I wasn't planning on starting a big church. It just happened. You can't turn people away when they want to come. But It took maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years for these folks to start trusting me from the other churches. Now, when I say other churches, we had one Baptist Union Church for 250,000 people.
Wow.
We had one unregistered Baptist church for 250,000 people. We had one Pentecostal church for 250,000 people. And we had one Seventh-day Adventist church for 250,000 people.
And everyone else is Orthodox.
That's right. And nobody had a church that had 100 people.
Yeah.
But when I say, when you say everybody else is Orthodox, in those days, nobody knew what Orthodox was. Hmm. 2 or 3 years before that, the Orthodox are being persecuted just like everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, now when the Soviet Union collapses, you've got a lot of older people who say, I'm Orthodox.
Yeah.
Because that's what their great-grandmother was. Mm-hmm. When they were a child, maybe, there was some freedom with the Orthodox Church. But they had basically lost their freedom. They weren't maybe as heavily persecuted the last 20 years before the collapse of the Soviet Union, but there was persecution among the Orthodox as well. I had Orthodox priests come to my evangelization. I had conversations with Orthodox priests. I didn't suffer any persecution from the Orthodox. It was the Baptist guys that were threatened by me.
Yeah.
Later, it would be the Orthodox, mm-hmm. Years later. But I didn't even really feel threatened by the police. Now, I'll tell you how green we were, though. We were so green. We did not know. You know how you have to get living permits and, came to Moldova and worked with me for a couple of years.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if people know that you worked in Moldova with us. But we had to get you a living permit there and it took several months to get that. Mm-hmm. You have to do the same thing here in Africa. I didn't know that. I just thought my visa was sufficient.
Yeah. So just the stamp.
Just
when
the
you
stamp
crossed
and the passport.
You thought you could stay.
Well, I was getting a year visa in the States.
Yeah.
Or if I went to Chisinau, I could get a year visa for Moldova. But I'm supposed to register with the city I'm in and get another card or permit that says I have a right to buy groceries or uh-huh. live there. And I didn't know that. But, about a year in, I got in trouble with the police. They come finally looking for me. And I know why they came looking for me. We're running big evangelization. Mm-hmm. This is a side story, but we were writing articles for the magazine Pravda. You know what Pravda means?
No.
Truth. And most Moldovans would say there's no truth in truth. there's no Pravda in Pravda.
Uh-huh.
But they would say no truth in truth. And I would say, well, there is now because I'm writing articles in Pravda.
Yeah.
So my article was truth. I was writing articles about the gospel in their magazine and they printed it. Can you believe it? I was on Prednestrovian radio. Now, this is the most communist area, and this radio is even going into Moldova. And every week, I had a weekly radio program, and I'm giving the gospel.
Uh-huh.
I would start off in English, and then my old Jewish translator would start to fade over me in Russian, and he would give the whole message in Russian because I'd write it out for him to do that. And so we had a radio program. So no wonder they came looking for me eventually.
Yeah.
And when they found me, it's like, you haven't registered with us. So I went down, I got the papers, I filled out all the papers, I did everything they told me to do, medical checks, everything.
Yeah.
When I go down, I'm sitting across the desk, like I'm sitting across from you right now, and the police chief is sitting there, and he's not saying anything, and you know how police look over there.
Yeah.
They look like they could just kill you with their eyes.
Yeah.
And
real Bond villains.
Yeah, you know? really. Yeah. And in those days, they were bad. But one thing I knew about the police, though, if you weren't afraid of them, they wondered who you were. Mm. And I always got out of trouble with the police more than most missionaries because it was obvious I wasn't afraid of them. And God just didn't allow my wife or I to ever be afraid there.
Yeah.
There were a few things we were afraid of, but most of the time the police weren't the people we were afraid of. But I'm sitting across from his desk and he tells me, I'm going to kick you out of the country because you violated our laws.
Uh-huh.
And I said, good. I'm glad. I said, because if you kick me out of this country, I will go back to America. I said, I'll probably write a book about my life in Prednestrovia. And I'll sell it for money. And then I'll tell my story. And then somebody will want me to be a pastor. And I said, I'm going to pastor a big church.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a nice house. I'm going to have 2 cars. I'm going to have a really nice salary.
Uh-huh.
I said, I'm going to live good.
Yeah.
And you're going to be here living like you live now. I said, now, if you really want to punish me, I said, you'll sign my papers. Then I have to stay here. I have to eat your cabbage and sausage, stand in your bread lines, and live the kind of life you're living. So I said, it's up to you. you can either punish me and sign my papers, or you can do me a favor and let me go home. Now, that guy, he sat there for at least 30 seconds looking at me. And honestly, I didn't know what he would do. But he said to me in English, as he was, we were speaking through translator, I was using my bad Russian. And he said to me in English, I think we keep you. But then he said I had to pay a fine, which amounted to about $36 for the whole family.
Yeah.
So I said, yeah, you're right. I was late on it, so I'll pay the fine.
Uh-huh.
So I stayed, and I labored, and I worked. Now, we were still planning to go home after 4 years, but we started running camps, and oh, we had such tremendous success running youth camps.
Mm-hmm.
And after we ran youth camps the first couple of years, I had some guys that had come down from Chisinau, the capital, to participate in our youth camp. And they pulled me aside after the second year, and they said, Eric, we have nothing like this anywhere we know. Mm-hmm. Nowhere in the Soviet Union is anybody running camps like this.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, Eric, please consider staying in Moldova and running a camp.
Yeah.
Well, when they said that, it's like the Spirit of God spoke to my heart and said, you need to run a camp in Moldova. And that foiled my plan to only spend 4 years in Moldova.
Mm-hmm.
And that because of that, we went home, we raised money, we started two youth camps. You worked and lived in our big camp there. Yeah. In Moldova, in Orhei region.
And I preached at the other one.
Yeah,
one
you did.
Week.
Did you preach in the big camp too? I think you did.
Just like once or twice, yeah. Not an entire week.
Yeah, but you were one of our main school guys. You were teaching, yeah, there at our Bible school. But when we started thinking camp, it put us on a lifetime of missions.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent over 20 years in Moldova, and I'm still going there, and I'm still working there. But, you know, the last 10 years we came to Africa.
Yeah.
And then you came, and now we're doing something else.
Yeah.
So that's kind of in a nutshell our story. There's mm-hmm. a lot of sub-stories that go off of that. But, you know, I suppose I could sit here for a couple hours and just tell stories about what God did.
Yeah.
And a lot of amazing things.
Yeah.
But I saw the revival ministry that we saw in Tiraspol continue in the camps.
Mm.
At least for the first 10 years of camp, we saw, you know, something 2,000 or 3,000 young people get saved every summer.
And you bought, I guess both of the camps used to be Soviet indoctrination camps.
Yes, yes.
And you bought the property and turned them into Christian camps.
That's right. These were pioneer camps under the Soviet Union. They were really big on camps, the Soviets were.
Mm-hmm.
They took young people to camps, and they, you know, on the surface they would look like Boy Scout, Girl Scout camps.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, they're talking about a lot of Soviet doctrine. Mm-hmm. And most young people have an opportunity to go to camp back in those days if they wanted to. So when we started a Christian camp, wow, everybody was excited. Everybody wanted to come.
Yeah.
Even the non-Christians wanted to come to camp.
Uh-huh.
Because there weren't camps being run then because they were too poor.
Yeah.
And there were just almost no camps. They had a lot of camps over in Ukraine as well. Mm-hmm. But nobody's running camps. So when we started camp, it became sort of, there's a Christian guy down here running a camp.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a blessed ministry for a long, long time. And we're still seeing a lot of young people come to Christ. We had, the last 2 years under COVID, we haven't been able to run a camp. But I was there, you know, a few months ago, during the summer. And we invited 300 young people to come out for a long weekend camp.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't supposed to do it, but we decided we were going to do it anyway. because we 2 years not doing anything.
Yeah.
We decided, well, it's just a long weekend. And we had over 650 young people show
wow.
up. We told them, there's no beds for this many. They said, we don't care. Just let us stay. Please, mm-hmm. just let us stay.
Mm-hmm.
Because young people were hungry to do something
yeah.
and to be a part of something again. And we just had a really great time this summer just mm-hmm. for that long weekend. And that reshaped my thinking about what I want to do next summer mm-hmm. if we can get past COVID-19.
So how did you ever come to Malawi? From Eastern Europe to Eastern Africa.
Yeah, that's another long story. I had a friend, I'll make it short. A friend of mine in Romania felt that he had a lot of young people in his mission, and he was a good friend. He was in central Romania. He said, I've got a lot of young people that say God's called them to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, that's funny. I got some young people as well
yeah.
who say they're called to Africa. And he said, well, let's pray about it. Well, he called me up about 3 weeks later, and he said, a friend of mine from the Netherlands, who's a missionary, is taking a trip to Malawi, and he's invited me to go. What do you think? I said, well, brother, go. This brother's name was Tom.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Tom, go see. Tom came back all excited, say, we have an open door in Malawi, and It's a very poor country. Our people know poverty. I think they could do a good job there. So we made several trips down. The government gave us a piece of land. We kind of built a camp. I don't think camp is the right word for it. That's what we called it. But we put a building there, and we brought young people in for weekend retreats and that kind of thing. There's a small Bible school over there. My friend passed away. He turned it over to his son-in-law. And then I just came across town, established another mission, and we're more of a church planting mission than they are. They're more of a camp thing. We're more of a church planting thing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I got started down here. It's a long story. A lot of trips, a lot of stuff happened.
Yeah.
But God's blessed. I think we've seen as many Africans saved than we saw in Moldova. And we've seen a lot of churches, as you know. You're working with those churches. So it's been a blessed time here in Malawi as well.
Yeah. And we've... when you started, you were mainly church planting and doing evangelism, and then you saw that once you do that, you have to start teaching these pastors something, and that led into what we're doing now with pastor training. And what do you say are some of the bigger differences between the ministry in Moldova and in Malawi in terms of culture need? And
of course, the gospel stays the same, but you know the way you do things in every country is different. Moldova's, you know, they're Russian society, but that's kind of European as well.
Yeah.
So if you're going to work with Europeans, that's a different kind of ministry than working with Africans. The message is the same, but it's how do we get the message across to people? In Malawi, the people are much more simple. There's a great need for education here. I would say most of the people we work with, particularly in the bush, are very poorly educated. Moldovans are more highly educated, but when I went to Moldova, there was a poverty there, a collapse of society. When there are difficult days and everybody's having a very, very hard time, it's very easy to listen to the gospel.
Yeah.
So there's your similarity to Malawi.
Yeah.
Right now, it's more difficult to start churches in Moldova. There's prosperity has come. They're moving up to European standard of living. Their education allows them to go off and get advanced degrees, and it's just a change of thinking.
Yeah.
But here, with the poverty and all, I'll give you an example of a ministry we do here we couldn't do in Moldova. I could never put five Moldovans on a bike and say, go out and go church planting. But here, you put five Moldovans on a bike, I mean, they're ready to go.
Yeah.
I mean, these Malawians are just ready to jump on that bike, go out there and preach the gospel and do the work. I got such a kick out of one of the things you're doing by sending out the students and saying, go out and trust the Lord, like Jesus sent out his disciples.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that would go over in Moldova. I mean, would it go over in the States?
Probably not.
Do you think you could send out, you know, some of the guys from our Bible colleges and say, now we're just going to send you out on foot or on a bike, and you just go out there and just pray to Jesus. No money. Just go out and pray to Jesus and ask Jesus to bless you and take care of you wherever you go. I don't think that would work in Moldova, but it works here.
Yeah.
And so a lot of things that I think we can get back more to the New Testament here than we can in Moldova. We're more modern society in Moldova.
Yeah.
Not when I first got there, but now we are. And so that's kind of the difference. I mean, if you're thinking what kind of society is Moldovan, if you've been to Europe, it's a European society.
Yeah.
Coffee shops, parks, nice restaurants, in Chisinau in particular. Villages are more poor. But it would be closer to American society for sure than Malawi. Malawi is another game. But then I'm in Central Asia too, so that's another game altogether if you want to talk about contrast. I'm on the board of the, I didn't start the Bible College in Chisinau, which is now the Christian University. I didn't start that, but I did preach there for years. They know me very well. They invited me to be on their board. And I, in return for being on their board and helping them, they're also helping me with the camp ministry there when I'm not there. And so we have a very good working relationship. A few years ago, they asked me if I would consider going to Central Asia and helping their graduates. They have a lot of graduates from Central Asia. These would be the Stan countries of the former Soviet Union. So just look at any of the Stan countries. As a matter of fact, one of our countries that I'm working in borders Afghanistan.
Okay.
You know, we're very near all that hotspot that everybody's talking about in the world today. And because they're Muslim countries, you know, I can't really reveal too much of the work we're doing, but we are doing some camps in Kyrgyzstan, and we're allowed to do some camps there. Mm-hmm. And then we're also setting up a mission in a different kind of Muslim country in that region that's very strict on missions.
Yeah.
That I really can't get into on your podcast. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, last question. Some of the people who are listening are interested in serving in missions. What's maybe one or two pieces of advice if you're just speaking directly to them, discerning God's call, preparing for a life of missions? What do you think they need to know?
I would tell young people right out of college, don't get in a hurry. Either get some experience in the States or go work with another missionary that has the experience and be willing to listen and learn. You know, I've had some guys that will listen to me and some guys that won't. I'm sitting here with Josh today because he was a guy that came to Moldova for 2 years and was soaking it up like a sponge. He was an easy guy to work with. Other guys are not so easy to work with. They know more about it than I do, you know, and I have to understand that because when I was 25 years old, right out of Bible college, I think there never was a time in my life where I knew more. But at 65, well, there's a lot of things I don't know still.
Yeah.
But I would say be patient. Let God speak to you. I would say make sure that you're motivated more by the Spirit than anything else. Mm-hmm. Sometimes guys get an idea to do missions because it sounds exciting. I would say when you come to Malawi, the first few months are exciting. But after 4 years, what do you think?
It starts to wear on you a bit.
It's tiring.
It's
tiring.
Really hot right now. We're just sweating buckets.
Okay, it's hot in Malawi. It's dusty. Mm-hmm. My wife and I have been coughing. We came from Central Asia down to here, and we're coughing. We had dust in our house. It took us weeks to get all the dust out of our house. Mm-hmm. I would also say that you're going to be under spiritual attack.
Yeah.
If you're not prepared for the spiritual battle, don't come.
Yep.
Why do so many missionaries leave quickly after they arrive on a mission field? It's because they're not prepared for the battle that's coming. Mm-hmm. You walk into Satan's territory and you're not going to stick your chest out and say, I'm here to deliver the good news and I'm going to turn this world upside down. Well, be careful. You might get turned upside down.
Yeah.
We have a country here in Malawi that's full of witchcraft. Mm-hmm. People casting spells. I've had people come to me and say, you know, certain pastor went to the witch doctor to cast a spell on me. I said, wait a minute, he's a pastor. Well, that's Malawi.
Yeah.
And that's why we're teaching and working so hard here. And mm-hmm. we're seeing a lot of results from our teaching and our preaching. And a lot of guys are turning away from darkness. But there are guys here who call themselves pastors that are living in darkness.
Yeah.
So we're moving people away from that. Now, was it any different in Moldova? I had a lady get saved in our evangelization who said, I was a witch and I was meeting with a group of witches and we put a curse on you and your car and I hear you wrecked your car and I hear you've been sick, so I want to remove the curse. I told her, listen, I don't want you putting your laying hands on me to remove the curse.
Yeah.
That's what she wanted to do. This is in Moldova now.
Uh-huh.
So does that sound like Malawi?
Yeah, yeah,
it does.
A lot like it.
I had wrecked my car, but I fixed it.
Uh-huh.
And I had been sick, but I got well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think that, I think if we're walking in the Spirit, if we're prayed up, if we're strong in the Lord, these things don't affect us the way some people might think they would. But the other thing I see with missionaries is fear.
Yeah.
I've had guys talk, when they used to come to Moldova, they would say, well, I would tell them, this guy over here is my KGB agent following me around.
Uh-huh.
And they would become frightened. And they would wonder why I wasn't afraid.
Yeah.
Well, I just wasn't.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why I wasn't afraid. God's Spirit had revealed to me there was nothing to fear.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're afraid, you can't do missionary work.
Right, right.
If your wife's afraid, you can't do missionary work.
Yeah.
We've had guys come and want to work with us, and we've recommended they not come now because the wife was so fearful mm-hmm. or so upset about the possibility of being a missionary.
Mm-hmm.
So I've told Josh, one of the things I teach him when new missionaries come, you're interviewing not just the man, you're interviewing the woman.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And if they got older kids, you might have to interview them too.
Yeah.
Because we know some of our larger boards have reasons why they don't take missionaries who have older children.
Mm-hmm.
They don't adjust well.
Mm-hmm.
So just look at the whole package. Get your pastor's advice. Come visit the mission field. Mm-hmm. Maybe stay a little bit longer than a week and work with Brother Josh or somebody like myself.
Mm-hmm.
And just see if it's for you and your wife. Mm-hmm. But you'll know if the Spirit of God's moving you in that direction.
Right.
It was clear to us. I just can't explain it as well as I'd like.
Yeah.
And I'm sure for you, Josh, it was clear for you as
well. Yeah, and there are doors that just open that are indicators that this is where God wants you to go. And
right.
Why would he provide this if he didn't want you there. So.
Well, I wanted Josh to come to Moldova.
Yeah.
Because we had the Bible school there and I needed a missionary there. But I guess you understood that we had some pretty sharp guys in Moldova,
yeah.
Victor and some of them that could do the job there. And there was a tremendous need here in Africa. Yeah. And I want to say on your podcast, I am so thankful that you came here. You and Stacy have just been troopers. And I couldn't go and work in Central Asia, which is probably the most difficult ministry we're ever trying to start is in Central mm-hmm. Asia. Mm-hmm. We've had more satanic opposition there than here.
Yeah.
I would say here it's been more covert opposition. Mm-hmm. There it's just right in your face.
Yeah.
And we couldn't go up there and help those brothers and sisters up there who are struggling greatly to get the gospel out if you weren't here. So I'm really thankful that you're here doing this work.
Well, it is hard, but it is a joy to take the baton and serve these pastors. And we're just so thankful for the years that you invested in this ministry and are still investing. And I'm thankful for your time to tell your story.
Well, thank you. Let me say one more thing.
Okay.
You know, Josh started the full-time Bible school here. I'm an evangelist. I don't know if Josh is a teacher and an evangelist, but he preaches like an evangelist and teaches like a teacher. I preach like an evangelist and teach like somebody who probably shouldn't be teaching, you know, on the deeper level anyway, like Josh does. But I have an honorary doctorate. He has an earned doctorate. But honestly, you've come here, Josh, and you have expanded this ministry. And I think a founding missionary could not ask for more in a young man who has a vision and the desire to work than what you and your wife have had. So I will say thank you very much for coming here and doing the work you're doing.
Well, thank you. And we just hope that the Lord makes us faithful.
Amen.
Amen.
Thanks for listening. You can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Gospel Life Go.
God provides for the needs of Gospel Life through your prayers and gifts. To become a prayer or giving partner, go to gospellife.org.
We hope you join us in glorifying God by growing disciples who make disciples. We hope that you live a gospel life.